Albertsons and Tom Thumb gas rewards are now better than ever. Just shop at Albertsons and Tom Thumb to earn gas reward points. Redeem up to 20 cents off per gallon at participating Chevron or Texaco stations and up to $1 off at Tom Thumb stations. Sign up at Albertsons.com/rewards or TomThumb.com today. Already signed up? Sign into your Albertsons or Tom Thumb app. Maximum gas reward at participating Chevron or Texaco stations is 20 cents per gallon and $1 per gallon at Tom Thumb stations, up to 25 gallons. Other restrictions and exclusions apply. See complete details at Albertsons.com/rewards.
Show.
Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining our show today. I am your host, Wanda McKinley, along with Stephanie Kennedy Alford, the co-host. I am a founder of We Are Survivors. We Are Survivors is a nonprofit organization, and our purpose is to provide a stable environment for abused, battered men, women, and children by providing temporary shelter, counseling, and employment training. We want to help individuals transition from abusive situations to being self-sufficient individuals in society. We Are Survivors' vision is to empower men and women and to show them that they can and will survive and thrive in society on their own, as well as to uplift them and provide them with a new perspective of what a normal life should be by enhancing and elevating them. I am a survivor of domestic violence. I was raped from the age of 7. Well, let me rephrase that. I was molested from the age of 7 to 12 and raped from the age of 13 to 18 by my biological father and my stepfather. I was also sexually, financially, verbally, emotionally, and physically abused by my ex-husband, and I was with him for 12 years. God has called me to be transparent so that I may help other individuals who have walked or may be walking in my shoes. Hello, Stephanie. How are you doing today?
Well, what about you, Stephanie?
I'm good. I'm like, where'd you go? I couldn't hear you for a minute. Tell us about what's going on with our fundraising event. This is our last show before Thanksgiving because we will not be on next week because I'm going to be fat full off some turkey. So tell us what you got going on.
Okay, we currently have several fundraisers, and your survivors would love your support. We have our Corporate Plus Rewards card, where if you currently have a Corporate Plus Rewards card, or if you will go and get a Corporate Plus Rewards card and link it to We Are Survivors, then each quarter, according to what you spend, they will send us a donation. So you're not doing anything different. You're just making sure that you're linked to We Are Survivors, and you go out and shop just like you normally shop, and each quarter they will send us a donation. Same thing with Tom Thumb. You go to TomThumb.com and you link it to We Are Survivors. Oh, I forgot. If you go to Kroger.com and link it, you start typing in We Are, and it should pull up We Are Survivors. The same thing with Tom Thumb. You put in their website, TomThumb.com, and you you link it to We Are Survivors as well. And each quarter we'll get a donation. Then we also do the CPN discount card, which is $15 a year. You get discounts all over the U.S. And half of that comes to us. And we do the Compass Bank fundraiser. If you currently have a Compass Bank account, or if you will go and get a Compass Bank account and link it to your survivor, according to which how often you use your card or your account, they give a donation as well. So we appreciate your help on any or all of those. And then we also do the Purple City Project. It's where it's one dealing with photography. And I would let Wanda explain that one because Wanda has done her pictures, did some beautiful pictures and everything, and because she's already gone through that process, I think it's best for her to explain that one. So, Wanda, I'll turn that over to you.
Thank you. It's called the Purple City Project. And what it is, it's like it's a domestic violence awareness photo shoot campaign. It can be personal. It can be professional. You can wear purple lipstick, purple socks. He even has a purple background in case you don't own anything purple. But purple will be somewhere in the picture. This fundraising event is actually to raise funds to be able to place someone. We received a phone call, and someone needs immediate evacuation. And unfortunately, as we keep stressing, the need for available beds in Dallas County is almost very little. Most of the time there is no bed available. I'm though glad to announce that there is a facility that just opened in Tarrant County. But right now, as far as Dallas County is concerned, there is very little availability for beds. So when we receive phone calls, and we do, that money would be available for us to put someone in a room immediately. And he has four different packages. I'll just go over the first two. The first one is a $55 package, which is valued at $100. It's a 20-minute session, up to four people. It's unlimited shots. You get one look, so ladies, that means one change of clothes, and two edits. And the two edits, you get to pick two pictures, two of your favorite pictures. You get to Photoshop it if you need Photoshopping. If you don't, that's grand. But if you do, he'll do it, and your $55 is paying for your two pictures. Then you have your $80 package, which is valued at $160. You have 45-minute sessions, up to four people, unlimited shots, two looks, which means you get to change clothes, and four edits, which means your $80 actually pays for four pictures. So if you have four people, then everyone can take home a souvenir. If not, then you just have four different pictures, four different poses of your event. And while you're having fun posing, because it really is fun, it was also a lot of work, but you're helping out someone that's going to need that, be it a man, woman, or child. Someone's going to need that, those funds to help them. So we're going to go into what We Are Survivors have going on in the community. Like I said, it is a holiday season, and the excitement in the air builds, but business-wise, we try to do the opposite because we've been going all year long. I, once again, want to thank everyone that has invited We Are Survivors to an event. Thank you for thinking of us. Thank the City of Dallas, the Police Department, for allowing us to be part of their summer program with the kids. That was a lot of fun. Being there twice a week. How long was that, Stephanie? Was it 3 months, 2 months? How long was that? Do you remember?
It was a good program, though. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. We're looking forward to it next year. But we want to thank, like I said, the City of Dallas. We'd like to thank the Police Department. We'd like to thank the Southwest Center Mall for even having the back-to-school program and us being a part of that, and Stephanie working really hard getting people registered at the little table. That was really cute. So just a lot of different events. A lot of different events that we went to. I just want everybody to know that we are thankful, we are grateful, and we don't take any invite that we get for granted. Anything that we are part of, we don't take for granted because you didn't have to call us. You have to think about us, so we just want to thank you. Already for 2017, we have several events already on the book. Several events already on the book for 2017. So just moving forward, we're not losing momentum. We are picking up momentum, which is a grand thing. Speaking of picking up momentum, I am so excited to announce that I did meet with the City of Lancaster, and we are moving forward with our first annual 5K walk in 2017. October 14th is the tentative date, so we're really excited about that. I am actually meeting with the Police Department next week to start up a domestic violence committee advisory board for the City of Lancaster so that we can put some things in place for residents who are in a domestic violence situation here in the City of Lancaster to be able to provide resources for them, to provide education for them, to educate students at the high school and the middle school and, Lord forbid, all the way down to the elementary school. We as survivors want to be a strong presence in the city of Lancaster and then branch out. But I want to start here in my subdivision, my city where I live. Can't be highly present somewhere else and not taking care of home. So I'm really excited about the city of Lancaster embracing We Are Survivors, because that is a massive undertaking to get a city behind you. So I'm excited about that. We are working on the International Women's Conference, you know, in August. We Are Survivors spoke internationally in Europe. And now We Are Survivors is actually hosting that same conference in Dallas, Texas, next year. August 25th and 26th are the dates. So stay tuned for that. As that unfolds and we get things in place, I want to thank Divine Productions, who is one of our sponsors, who actually has handled all of the hotel rates and the blackouts that she has to different locations. She's also set up a traveling website for the people that are coming in, flying in from different parts of the world. I thank her for that. And she's actually working on the food vendors. So anyone that can help remove anything from my plate, I thank them. Also want to thank Faith Diva, who is another one of our sponsors, who will be, of course, dressing myself and my sister, a partner from Europe, our dresses for the evening. And definitely we're going to talk about yours for that evening for the gala. That's also in the works. July 21st and 22nd, We Are Survivors has been, I want to say, maybe like adopted for 2017, and there are several events that We Are Survivors will be able to benefit from monetary donations as well as tangible items that will be donated to us from these several events that are already, like I said, booked for 2017. And there's a women's conference. It's called RUN. Dr. Cassandra Bradford is the founder of that, and her women's conference that We Are Survivors is a part of is August, like I said, July 21st and 22nd, and then our conference, women's conference, is August 25th and 26th. So as you can tell, we have some back-to-back women's conferences. But enough for that. I want to get into the meat of our program. And, you know, for a while we've talked a lot about domestic violence. We've had just different open discussions. And I'm kind of going back to our original thing, and that's having guest speakers on, having survivors on, having people come on and tell their testimony and talk about how God brought them through what some people, when they hear our stories, are blown away. And I haven't physically met this woman, but we are going to be involved in co-writing a book together. So I'm excited about that. And without further ado, I'm going to open it up for Ms. Ira Warren. How are you doing today?
I'm just so excited. Y'all don't even know. I'm just so excited about what God is doing and what he's doing with his children, the body of Christ. You know, and my grandfather used to say something when I was a little girl, because my father, my grandfather, he was a pastor for many years, and he also walked with Martin Luther King, you know. And
wow.
He said, you know, there's no big eyes and no little
awesome.
You. And he said, you know, he said, when you do, he said, the only thing that you're going to do in this lifetime that will last is what you do for Christ. And I believe that with all my heart. You know, it says the more and more I walk with God and the more I get closer to him and just completely deny and die to myself daily, I see more of what he wants me to do. I'm just excited.
it's something, because I was telling someone, actually today, for me it's exciting to be a chosen one, to actually know my purpose,
yeah.
to actually know my calling, to know why I was put here on earth. Because there's people that walk around and leave this earth and not know why they were put here from the beginning. But I feel so honored and so blessed that God said, okay, my child, now you're ready. Now let me explain to you and show you why you are here. This is your purpose. This is why you were made. And for me to be able to walk in it is amazing.
Right.
I feel different. And when I'm talking to someone, I'm in a room sometimes with people, and I feel out of place. Because it's like, I know why I'm here. It's amazing.
Right.
It's an amazing feeling. So, Ira, we were on a show, a radio show together, Tuesday night, Tuesday evening. I was trying to be on the radio show, be in class. My professor was telling me like I was crazy because I had my earpiece thing in my ear and I'm really listening. Then when I hear my name, I got to step out and answer the question. It was hilarious, but I did it. I was so touched and amazed by your story. And while we were actually on the radio, I was like inboxing you, I need you on my show. And here you are. So I want you to share as much as you feel comfortable with to the listening audience and the people that actually, because this will be put on Facebook. So whatever you say, if they didn't hear it live, they will hear it memorized.
Okay, not a problem. I'm to the point where I have shared my story so much. I mean, I've been sharing since I was 17. And, you know, to now have a voice, you know, with child molestation is an awesome thing to me. You know, unfortunately, you know, I'm originally from Gary, Indiana, but Texas is really home for me. I was born in Gary, Indiana. We left there when I was 11 years old, and we moved to Texas. The molestation started when I was 4 years old. You know, it was the fondling. By 6 years old, I was doing fellatio. I mean, I was, if you know what fellatio is. I was doing all of those things, you know. I mean, I was watching porn movies with my father sitting on his lap, you know, while he did whatever he wanted to do to me, you know, in my toddler years, like from four all the way until 6 years old. You know, those things were happening to me, you know, and I knew it was wrong, you know, because I would say, Daddy, please don't do this, you know, don't do this. You know, I'd say, why? And he was like, you're Daddy's little girl, you know, I love you. And it wasn't until later on, as I got older and I understood that this whole thing was mainly about control more than it was sex. You know, it is, but it isn't, you know. So my dad was a very controlling man. He was that person that, you know, if my mom, you know, looked to the left too long, you know, she was getting slapped upside the head, you know, because he just had that much control over the entire family. The first time I was penetrated, you know, by my father when I was 9 years old, I mean, my hymen cap broke at 9 years old. And then on top of that, I was sodomized. You know, I was, you know, he had anal sex with me, you know, at nine. And I remember, you know, after he did whatever he was doing, it was just like an animal. I could just still hear his grunting and the sweat dripping from his brow onto me. And my little frame body, I probably wasn't no more than 75 pounds soaking wet. And I was, you know, held down while he did whatever he wanted to do to me, you know. And, you know, not to be explicit or anything, he wasn't a small man, you know. Like, you know, he ripped me, you know, he tore me to pieces. And I remember this happened on a Saturday during the summer because school. And I, you know, would go, normally I would go sell dinners with my mom at the church. Now, this happened in Indiana before we moved to Texas. And, you know, the old school churches, Methodist churches, you know, how they would sell dinners, you know, to bring it. Like, my grandfather was totally against it. He was like, you don't have to sell dinners, you know, but, you know, he said, I just don't want y'all to sell dinners. God will provide. So that was one of the days I wanted to go with my mom because I felt in my spirit that morning when I woke up, it was something different in the atmosphere. It was the way my dad was looking at me you know, during, you know, across the breakfast table, the way he would eat his food, the way he would lick his finger. It was just the whole sickness of it, you know. And I begged my mom, you know, I said, Mom, please, you know, because I had scared her that morning. She was stirring some grits. And I said, Mom, and she jumped around and she was upset, you know, because I wasn't intentionally trying to scare her. But she was upset, and she was like, no, you're going to stay here behind here. She didn't say it like that, though. She was like, you're going to stay here with your daddy, and you're going to do your chores, and you're going to leave. And I just remember just feeling uneasy that day. And so Mom, she went, she left, and I remember my friend Yvette, you know, she was waiting for me outside the door. She was like, girl, hurry up with your chores. So as my mom was leaving, My friend, she was singing the song, Ding Dong, the Witches Gone, because she hated my mom. I was like, girl, don't hate my mom. She was like, no, because have you in this situation, and you need to tell. And it was like, it was a fear, because my dad was like, if you tell, I'm killing everybody. And he meant that, because he had several guns in the house. And so I thought that I can't, you know. So that day when my mom had left, Yvette said, you know, hurry up, so I hurry up with my chores, and my dad checked them, and I mean, it was like military in our household. My dad would actually put on a glove, and if it was some dust, no, you need to clean that again. That's how he was. He was like E.F. Hutton. Whatever he said, you do it. And so, you know, I did my chores to the best of how he wanted me to do it, and he said, okay, you can go outside. I wasn't even outside 10 minutes. And he said, Ira, my full name is Ira now. He said, Ira now, come here. And I was scared, because when he would talk, it was something about his voice, because my dad is 6'3", and my mom is 4'8". So, you know, that's a big difference in height. So my heart started beating fast. So my hands were sweaty, and I walked through. He said, come through the back door. And I walked through the back door, and I said, yes, Dad. And he was sitting on the couch in the living room, and I'll never forget it. We had this crushed velvet, like maroon like couch, and we had the lamps that had like the little teardrops on them. I don't know if y'all remember those. And he was sitting on the couch, and Dad, I said, did I not do my chores? He said, no. He said, you did your chores real good. And he said, it's not what I called you in here for. And I said, am I gonna get a whooping? And he was like, no, you're not gonna get a whooping. He said, you didn't give Daddy a kiss today. And I was like, oh, okay, you know, so I wasn't thinking nothing of it, you know. So he grabbed me between his legs, like he was sitting on the arm of the couch, and he tongue kissed me. I said, and I pushed him away. I took both of my hands, and I kind of, you know, like palmed his face with both of my hands and said, no. And he was just like, I love you. And next thing I know, I was being drugged, and he in my mom's room, he drugged me in the room. He snatched his porn magazine from the closet. And he says, you're old enough. I said, old enough for what? And I'm just crying. And he was like, look at this. And I took both of my hands, and I'm covering my face. And he peels my fingers from my face one by one. And he was like, no, you're going to look at this, and you need to know what I'm going to do to you today. And just the fear.
Wow.
I was just like, at that moment, you know, because I was in church all my life, I just was like, God, just take me right now. And that's all I could think, just take me right now. So after he forced me to watch this book, look at this porn magazine, I was sitting at the edge of the bed, and he was like, well, take your shorts off. And I was like, no. So I remember him shoving me back on the bed, and he snatched my shorts off of me. And I took my hands, and I'm trying to cover my private area, and I'm just like, Dad, please don't do this. And he was breathing all hard, and he took his pants down, and he was wrecked, and he was just like, I love you. And then the next thing you know, I was screaming, and he put his hand over my mouth, and then that was the time that he had sodomized me, and the phone rang. No, my brother knocks at the door. He goes, Dad, you in there? He goes, get away from the door. I'm sleeping. I'm taking a nap. And so my brother, I could hear him run down the hallway, but he had his hand over my mouth. But did I dare to scream? No, I didn't. Because I was terrified of my father. So after he finished, you know, doing what he was doing to me, he had the phone rang again. It was my mom, and, you know, she had to check in. She said, well, I'm on my way home. And he knew how far it was from the church into the house. So she was 1 minute late, she was going to get her behind once. Bottom line, if she was 1 minute late, she was in trouble. So I remember him after he finished doing what he was doing, and I got up from the bed was full of blood. And he said he panicked, and he was like, go to the restroom right now. And I remember going to the restroom, and I pressed up against the door with my little small frame, and I was running the bath water at the same time, and I'm crying. And when I got in the tub, the water went from white to pink to just like a cherry red color. And I was ripped. He had ripped my behind and, you know, tore my hymen. I mean, I was a bloody mess. And he was like, well, put on one of your mom's tampons. And, you know, and he put a pad. I mean, he just knew what he was doing, you know. So after all that was finished and, he was saying, hurry up and come out of the bathroom. So I came out. And he was like, I'm sorry, this never going to happen again. And, you know, for a while it didn't, until stepsister came. I didn't even know we had a stepsister until the summer of 79. That's when I found out we had a stepsister. My mom did not want her to come, you know, to stay the summer with us. But long story short, she took two number two pencils, wrapped it with tape, and she molested me with pencils.
Wow.
She was making me do stuff to her, and I was just like, wait a minute, you know. And I was telling her no. I was like, Linda, no, I don't want to do this. And she was just like, I love you, I care about you. I was like, you don't even know me, you know. And I'm fighting, and you know, I was sleeping under the bed, and you know, she stayed the whole summer with us. And I was just like, you know, I just can't wait till she leaves. And you know, and when she left, I thought everything was over with. I thought what my dad said after he did what he did, he said, oh, this is over with. It's not going to happen again. But lo and behold, my father painted cars for a living. My parents was always entrepreneurs. They really never worked for anybody. So he built this garage behind our house. We lived off of 601 Allen Street. I'll never forget our address because that's where we lived in Indiana. And so he built, and my dad was into race cars. So my dad was popular in the community. Everybody loved Jake in the community. So we thinking, okay, the garage will be built for cars to be painted. No, that garage was also built for him to molest me and my siblings in the middle of the night as well.
Wow.
So sometimes it would be duct tape on the mouth so we couldn't scream or whatever the case may be. And then it escalated to him making us have sex with our brothers. I mean, it just escalated. It just went up and up and up. I mean, to the highest level of sickness you could think of, you know. We did everything but bestiality because he was just that sick.
Wow.
And so my freedom came when supposedly my dad had did something to somebody and killed. I don't know what it was, but he came rushing through the house. He said, we got to go. We got to leave. We got to leave. We got to leave. And my sister and I, we had just got a brand new bedroom set and we had to sell everything in the house, and his brother James took all our records, whatever we couldn't take or we couldn't pack in our car. We went by, we said bye to our Madea that lived, you know, she lived in Indiana as well. We said bye to her, and then my dad took us to Arkansas, Osceola, Arkansas, where his mother lived. And he dropped us off, and then he and my mom went to Texas. This was 1980. And we stayed there with his mom for a year. I was so free. Y'all don't even know. I was like,
wow.
Yeah. I don't know nobody touching me. I didn't have no interest in boys. People thought I was gay. I didn't care what they thought. I was just happy to not have to go through the stench because I hated the smell of my father. I hated who I was as a – I mean, by this time, I'm 12 years old. And, I mean, I would literally, you know, the Brillo pads you would scrub a pan with, I would literally scrub my vagina closed with that because I hated what he had done to me, you know. And I was doing this all the way up until last year. My niece, no, 4 years ago, my niece came to my apartment and she said, Auntie, what are you doing? And I was in the bathroom scrubbing because sometimes I go through my bouts. If it's a certain smell or if it's something that trigger, you know, don't touch me. Just let me sift through this. Let me see how I'm going to figure out, you know. So I never had the opportunity, you know, to sit in front of someone and say, hey, you know, I need some help or whatever the case may be. But I had spiritual counseling, but, you know, just to sit and say, how do I overcome this and how do I get over this? It's been all God through this whole process.
Right.
But it started back up again. You know, my grandmother was tired. She said, look, you need to come get your 5 kids. I can't do it no more because my grandmother had shingles. And, you know, she was going downhill as far as her health. And I understood that. And I begged to stay with my Auntie Evelyn. I was like, please let me stay, you know, because I didn't want to have to face what was going to happen next. And I knew my father was lying because his appetite for control and sex was just over the top. So we moved to Texas. My parents moved in this beautiful home in Katy, Texas. And everybody had their own room. My mom was very materialistic, so she didn't see what he was trying to do. You know, he was like, okay, I need to make sure they have their own rooms because this is going to be my opportunity for me to do what I want to do. And he did. It was to the point he made my mom get a job working at night so he could have sex with me and my sister while she was at work. I mean, it just, and if he was going to pick her up from work, because he forbidden my mom to drive herself to work, so he had to take her and pick her up. So before he would go pick her up, he would drive behind the elementary school that my baby brother went to and have sex with me before he went to go pick up my mom. So my mom didn't know that he had sex with me before we picked her up from work.
Wow.
You know, molested me. Yeah. So it was just a level of sickness, you know. I was just like, and I remember asking my dad, I said, did this happen to you? And he was like, no. Nah. This ain't happened to me. You got to understand, you know, this is how it is. You know, even in the Bible, you know, they say, you know, so he brought the biblical stuff. And I was like, yeah, but in Leviticus, that ain't thing, brother. It was forbidden to lay with your daughters. I said, so let's not go there. You know, so I knew a little something about the Bible. But he was really into, you know, I'm the king of this house. And I'm going to be like David. And I'm going to have many wives. And, I mean, he was really saying all of this. And it got to the point where my mom would say, you know, he's God to me. I don't know which y'all little helpers, and I'm being clean when I'm saying what I'm saying, you know.
Mm-hmm,
so my
right.
mom was very, yeah, she was just, my mom was cruel. This woman was spitting my food and slapped me across the face. And since I came out the womb, I knew I was a giver. I knew I wanted to be a minister. I knew I wanted to sing. I knew I wanted to help people. That's how I was. And I remember taking some food to two of the kids, children at the school that I went to. I went to Marquette Elementary in Indiana. And I was given I had given some food to one of the kids. And my teacher called and said, you know, Iris bringing extra food to school? And my mom was like, what? She was upset. And she denied me food. She denied me dinner. I didn't have dinner for days, like weeks. She was like, I'm going to teach you a lesson. So what I would do, I would save the lunch, put it in my backpack in the middle of the night. That's what I would eat. And she always was like, well, how come this little helper never complained, you know? And then she found out. Then she went through my backpack, and she was like, oh, so this is how you going to do this, you know? So my mom always treated me like the other woman. Why? Because a child was conceived. I had a child by my father. And so I remember her slapping me in the face, and she was like, how could you do this to me? And I'm looking at her like, whoa, wait a minute. I'm your child. How could you let your husband do this? How could you let him do this to me? And so we went through all those bouts and everything, and my dad divorced my mom the year I married my first husband in 94. They divorced, and my mom was going through something because my brother, it's been almost 25 years now. My brother that's under me, he died of leukemia. He had cancer. And my mom wanted a replacement. So she pretended that she wanted to have a relationship with me when her and my dad had separated. They weren't divorced yet. And she said, well, Ira, you want to come to the house? You know, I know you're trying to get on your feet. And I was like, oh, okay. But I said, she really wanted a relationship with me. Me being naive and not seeing the signs, rolling forward. Joshua, my son that I had by my father, he falls off the bed into one of those electric heaters. He burns his leg.
Oh. Wow.
So I rushed him to the emergency room. I told them what happened. And they say, well, you got to be careful because you know children. And he's like, and then Joshua, he was like, my mama, good mama, my mama, good mama. You know, he's a baby. You know, he was, you know, trying to let these people know, now, my mama didn't do this. But the next morning, I'm on my way to my third job because I always kept three jobs to take care of my boy. The cop said, are you Ira, Ironell Jacobs? I said, yes. They said, well, it's been reported that you are abusing your children. I was like, what? So I turn around, and my mom is standing behind me with her arms folded, and she looking at me like, I got you. She had my children taken away from me for several years. I was devastated. And during that time, I said, look, I was abused in this home. Y'all, they said, no, we ain't got nothing to do with that. That's what they said. We don't have nothing to do with you grown, so we don't have nothing to do with that. So my baby brother, whom just got out of prison, he molested my child that I had by my father at five. So you're talking about generational curse.
Wow.
Just over and over. So I didn't find this out until Joshua was 14 years old. I didn't find out until he was 14 years old because When I met my first husband, he paid all this money for me to get my children back. They were two boys. I had Joshua and William. And so I had met my first husband when I was 17 and he was 27. And then a couple of years later, he said, you know, I know you've been through a lot. You know, I just want to be there for you. It wasn't that we was in love or anything like that. He just wanted to take care of me, you know. And so my mom was like, you might as well let that, because ain't nobody going to want no ready-made family. You might as well. And, you know, like I said, it wasn't that I loved him. I cared about him. I thought he was a good guy, you know, and I married him. And we was together almost 20 years. But lo and behold, he was a blessing. You know, he was like a father to me. He fathered me more than wife me because I didn't know anything. I was broken and tore up and all kinds of stuff, you know. So anyway, I ended up getting my children back because of Kirvin Rector. I am going to say his name because he's a good guy. And he did help me get my children back, you know. And I remember the judge calling my dad a sick so-and-so. He was just like, I read your daughter's records. And he was like, had I known that this happened to her? Because it was years that had gone by this time. And, you know, so it really wasn't nothing that they can do. But like they say, when you plant a seed, it's going to grow. That harvest is going to come. So eventually my dad did go to prison. Not because of what he did to us. He molested his second wife. A young lady that went to school with us, he married her. Her name is Teresa. He married her. Mm-hmm. And he molested her daughter and son. And he went to prison.
Wow.
They gave him 15 years. He only did five. And my brother, they gave him 15 years, and he only did five. And I know Joshua is still hurting. About this because he would come to me. He said, Mom, you know, I'm struggling with who I am as a man. And, you know, we would sit down and we would pray and, you know, we would just talk about it. And, you know, thank God, to God be the glory. You know, he has a beautiful family. He has two daughters, one son, a beautiful wife named Brittany. I mean, Joshua's doing well. You know, does he still have his struggles? Yes, he does, you know, because when a man, you know, takes another man's, you know, dignity, you know, his innocence, that's deep, you know. I mean, and I know how he feels because I had a woman do that to me, a young girl do that to me. My sister that was, you know, a couple of years older than me. I think she was 14 and I was 9 when she did that to me. So I understand how he feels or how he felt, you know. But the thing, it just went on for so long, and I mean, just to go backwards a little bit, when I found out I was pregnant, my sister went to the high school. It was Taylor High School we went to in Katy, and you know, Katy is known for football, and she told the principal. The principal was devastated. She was like, "And your sister is pregnant," and I remember the cops coming to the school, they put jackets over our head, they let us out the back door, you know, took us you know, to Richmond, Texas, all the way out somewhere in this big white house where other children that was raped and molested, and lo and behold, it was more boys than it was girls. You know,
wow.
And I never returned home after that. My sister, she was old enough to get her own place. And then, they said, look, you're not putting my sister in foster care. I'll take her. So, you know, that's when I met William Green. And I thought he understood everything. He was like, I'm sorry you went through all of that. And, you know, come to find out he was abused. And so that, therefore, he abused me. We had a son together, William Green Jr. And it's crazy because both of them are right now, as we speak, somewhere outside of San Antonio. They're in the same prison. His father's in prison for stabbing me. He murdered our unborn child, and he's been in prison since he was 17. So, and then my son, his son, you know, William, you know, we raised our children, you know, in the best neighborhoods. I homeschooled my children. William was an honor roll student. I mean, smart as a whip, good looking guy, you know, but he just wanted to run the street and run behind these people or these young boys that wasn't his friend, you know. So my son doing 15 years for armed robbery. And he has twin sons, you know, that he's not going to see for another 2 years. So he's up for parole 2019. So it's just like my life has just been
wow,
a lot. It's been a lot, you know, from being raped by pastors in Texas. I mean, you name it. It has just escalated, you know. And now I'm to the point where I have just said, okay, God, you know, since it just wasn't my time, all the last 540 times all this stuff has happened to me, I guess it just wasn't my time. I guess I'm just going to have to take this pain and use it for purpose. That's the only thing I could think of at this point. And you just going to have to heal me because I need it. You know, I need to be healed right now with all the stuff that I'm enduring, you know, because I was that young girl that was into ideation. Y'all don't know how many times I looked at a bottle of prescription pills, and I was into cutting. One day I almost took my whole car off the freeway, and God saved me. My kids was in the car. William ended up getting like 16 stitches across his forehead. I was done. I was tired. And I was just, all I could think about was, I nasty. To, you know, I said, but since I'm here, well, God just, you know, use me. And I'm going to keep telling my story. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm not going to hide it. All the way up until September 5th of last year, my parents was for it. My new husband now, which has just been, he was a godsend, and he's been my anchor. I mean, he said, we're going to carry this baggage, and we're going to drop this baggage together. We're going to do this again. He's just been, you know, God is my everything, but the God in him is my everything. You know, he just helped me just release a lot of stuff, you know. So I just want to do God's will. I'm where you at, you know, sis. I'm just to the point where I'm ready to stand outside on the blocks when the sun goes down and the lights is out and scream while they sleep. Hey, come out of there, girls.
Yes.
You know, I'm just to that point because, you know, that's where the dirt goes, is behind closed doors. Nobody,
you know,
we could go to a church and you sitting in there, you know, the pastor got an issue with, you know, perversion, and he can't keep his hands to himself and stuff like that. I've gone in churches in Texas where I've gotten thrown out. They're like, no, you can't come in here with that. No. Bye. My whole school was talking about molestation and fornication and all that, and they was like, no, you can't come in here talking about that. So I'm sold out.
Does your son know that his father is your father?
Yes, he does. He does. And it, you know, he was angry with me, you know. He was like, Mom, you know, how could you let this happen? You know, with him being so young, he didn't understand all the logistics of everything that was going on, but now he does. You know, he despised, you know, because at first, you know, he was really, really upset with my mom, you know, and he was just like, you know, that's your daughter. You know, why wouldn't you take my mom out of that situation? And the crazy thing is, you know, when my parents separated and then divorced, like in 1980, I want to say 1998, they had divorced. They had finally went through their divorce. My mom moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And so she stayed there for 4 years, and my baby sister begged her to come back. And she said, well, Ira, could you meet me up here and drive back with me? I said, yeah, sure. But that was my opportunity to talk to her, like woman to woman. And I said, Mom, I said, we having a good time on this road trip and everything. I said, but when we get back home, we need to talk. She was like, oh, okay. She, you know, I could almost hear her heartbeat. And I remember her, we were sitting at the kitchen table, and I said, Mom, you never asked all the stuff he did. And I said, in order to free myself, I said, I've forgiven both of you. I said, but it's some things you need to hear.
Right.
And I sat there and I told her everything. And I mean, my mom took her nails and dug it in her arms. You know how people fold their arms? And she dug her nails and she scratched. I mean, she went to Greenburn and she took the skin off her arm. She was like, I can't hear no more. And I was like, Mom, sit down. You're not running.
Right.
I said, no, no, ma'am. No, ma'am, press ham, you going to listen. And she had to. She had no choice. And she hated me for another 8 years. I was okay with that. And my older sister, she, you know, she was like, well, you know, that's our mom. And, you know, and then she'll go, my older sister, she'll go through her bout, you know, she loves us, and then it's a, they have a love-hate relationship. My sister done beat my mama up and all kinds of stuff. And now they cool again. They back in each other's good grace again, you know. But me, after my parents called and cut me off for the 100th time, I'm done. I've forgiven. I don't have no hurt. I don't have no animosity. But I am staying vertical with God, and I'm moving forward. And my dad called me talking about, oh, I thought you changed, and we ain't had no problem with you sharing your story, and you down there telling that man, and all of a sudden it went from son-in-law to the man, you know. His whole everything just changed. Like, you have a freedom of speech, and you can say what you want to say, you know. If you look up Robert Lee Jacobs Sr., he going to pop up. When he got out of prison, his picture was all over Kroger's. I was walking in there to get some food. Wow. I said, whoa, what? They sent out cards and put them in your mailbox. This is a sex offender that's in such and such mile radius of where you live. You know, so he's going to have to wear that, you know, wear that crown that he made for himself for the rest of his life. But he's mad because now my husband, he just walked through the door. He told my husband, oh, yeah. Chubb, that he still called me my childhood nickname. She needs to share her story because she can help a lot of people. Because when I was in prison, I heard her songs and they helped me and blah, blah, blah. You know, he was the whole hoodwink bamboozle, still a manipulator because he still run my mom. You know, she remarried him, by the way. You know, she remarried him 2005. I mean, he wasn't even out 4 months before they got married. Remarried. So, you know,
my mother married my father more than once.
Wow.
And my father was abusing my mother. Isn't that something? And even to this day, my mom and dad, my mother acts so different in the presence of my father.
Yeah.
And I had no idea until I became transparent that my father was abusing my mother.
Yeah, that's how it
no
is.
No idea.
Mm-hmm. So now
it's
my
dad. About...
No, go ahead.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
No, I was just going to say he's not punching and hitting my mom, but he still manipulate. He has her mind. You know, she doesn't think for herself. You know. If he say jump, she say, okay, how many times? You know, that's it. You know, he has her, he's subliminal with it. She don't see it, you know, because he showers her with all of these things. If you was to open up a Martha Stewart magazine, that's my parents. I mean, house decked out, nice cars, Mercedes this, diamond rings, you know. And that's how he's always been able to reach my mom, by just giving her what she wants.
So as of today, you all, where's y'all's relationship as of today?
We don't talk at all. They call, like I said, they called me after I did my first interview when I moved here, which was September 5th of last year. And then maybe a week or 2 weeks after the interview, I told my mom, before I even did the interview, look, I'm going to tell her. She said, yeah, you know, people got to be delivered and set free just as well as the offender. The victim has to be, you know, she was saying all the right things. She was saying all the right things. And then my dad called. She didn't call. He called. And I was quiet. And he was just like, oh, I'm just disappointed. I thought you changed. I'm saying to myself, for what? And he was like, I don't want to have nothing else to do with you. We disown you. I found your birth certificate. I erased my name off your birth. Yeah, I was like, okay. I took your pictures off my wall. I don't want to think of you, look at you. And I'm saying to myself, but you have no earthly idea. And in my mind at the time, I said, you chauvinist, whatever pig. I was saying all kinds of stuff in my mind, but I didn't say anything. I was quiet. I didn't say a word. And then he was like, you have a good life, and I wish you well, and just know I love you. I was like, wow, okay.
Wow.
And we hadn't talked to him. And it's going to stay that way, because he hasn't come to some acceptance, because both of them are still in denial. So
right.
That's how it's going to be.
That is a wow, because my father and me and my father were close. Like I said, Tuesday, my story, the way I processed and the way God protected me from so much. So when I did come out and tell my story, my father did call, and his thing was it's 2 years. What is today? 2 years this month. So the last time I heard my father's voice. And his thing was, hey, baby, I hear someone's lying on us. And I was like, huh?
That's what they say. That's
hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like I'm hearing, you know, someone saying that, you know, I've raped you and, you know, all of these things. And I'm like, Dad. And I just simply said on the phone, I said, it is you and I on this phone, and I am not that little girl anymore. I said, and you cannot convince me otherwise. I know what
yeah.
you did to me. I said, and you're not getting ready to try and manipulate my thoughts. I am grown. And then he just kind of, you know, he's like, well, baby, just, you know, be careful what you say. And I said, well, what is that supposed to mean? Because, you know, those kind of me and you, and my father was military, and my mom was stay at home. So those kind of mean you don't defy, you don't challenge, you don't stand up to. So he's like, oh, somebody's at my door, hold on. He said, well, no, wait a minute, I'll just call you back. And I said, okay. I haven't heard from my father since. He's changed his number. I have not heard from my father. And me and my father, one Sunday, you know, he's like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, I'm getting ready for church. He's like, I'm going to go to church with you. I said, Dad, you live in San Antonio. I'm like, I'm going to go to church with you. I said, Dad, I don't have time to be playing with you. I'm getting ready to go to church. So I opened your door. My dad was sitting outside my house. My dad had gotten up just that early, got dressed, drove from San Antonio, went to church with me, ate with dinner with me after church, and drove back to San Antonio. That is the kind of relationship me and my father had before I decided to be obedient to God and be transparent to my story. So for me, okay, not only am I going through all of this emotional, but now I've lost my father. I forgave him years ago.
Yeah.
But I guess all the things that you were doing for me, as long as I was quiet, we were cool. As long as I didn't tell the truth, you were going to do whatever you need to do to make sure I kept my mouth closed. And I realized that all these years, that's all you were doing, was trying to make sure I kept my mouth closed. So I have to go through all that emotional, like, whoa. Now I'm like, okay, so what part of my life was true? Or were you just doing what you thought you had to do to keep my mouth closed? Because now
yes,
the father that I had is totally gone. Like, it just vanished. Like, how can I be your number one child, your number one daughter, as you would always say? I love you the most. Can't, wouldn't know what life would be without you. You said all those things to me as long as I kept my mouth closed. As long as I didn't tell your little dirty secret, you kept me, bought me things. It didn't. You would jump over the moon for me, as long as I kept my mouth. So now I'm sitting back looking at all of this, and I'm like, oh, wow. So what part of our relationship was really, honestly, fatherly, daughterly love? What part of it was, or did it even exist? When the lines become blurred, the first time you touched me, is that when you switched off your father mode and went into abuser mode and stayed there and did whatever you had to do to keep that little girl quiet? And it worked almost 40 years.
Yeah,
it amazes me.
My dad was the same way. I mean, he was cool on the other side of the pillow. I mean, we was like, you know, I could go over to the house with mom not even being there, and he'd be like, oh, hey, tell how you doing. You want something to drink, baby? You know, oh, here's $30, you know. You didn't have to come out here. And I'm like, that's okay, I'm good. You know, I was paying my parents' mortgage and buying stuff for the house. And, you know, I wasn't doing it as some kind of peace offering or whatever. I was doing it because I loved them, you know. And we had a good relationship all the way up until September 5th of last year. And, you know, my mom was worried about her reputation. My friends don't talk to me no more. And I'm like, get over it. This is not about you. You know, if you had stayed at the shelter with us, my mom, she looked at me and my older sister. She said, y'all heifers don't go downstairs and tell that woman that child lied. Because she wanted to go back to her whole six-bedroom house and her Mercedes and her diamond ring. Yeah.
Wow.
She told us to go and tell that woman. And that woman, she looked at us with tears rolling down her face. And she said, I know y'all not lying. And my sister said, well, can you just take us? She said, your mom have to say this happened. You know, things were just different in the 80s. And you know, things were just different back then. You know, so... I stare in the face of 42 predominantly black young girls where I work, and they've gone through the same thing. It's a 13-year-old girl just got an abortion from her own daddy. Just got an abortion. She said, I don't want this baby.
Wow.
It's my daddy's baby. You know, and just the oncology of where the dynamics of where she lived, you know, so she lived in a poverty area, you know. So she said, oh, my uncles, you know, everybody, you know, it was just like, she was talking like it was something normal, but she don't know no better.
Right. Exactly. And I understand that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, you know.
Yeah.
That's your way of life. Until you get older and start looking like, wait a minute, this is not right. Because when I was about 15 with my stepfather, I was like, wait a minute, I don't like boys my age. I don't want to be able to talk to boys my age. And, you know, that's another story. And
yes,
we got less than a minute left on the show, or about a minute left on the show. And it's moments like this when 60 minutes is not long enough for these shows.
No, it's not.
Oh, wow. But we always can continue do another show after Thanksgiving holiday. Definitely going to pick up because we really do have some things in common. Stephanie, you have anything to say before we get off the show for tonight?
No.
I know she got it muted.
I know she got it muted. Well, I do want to thank Ira for coming out. We will have you again. That's a promise because we got more to talk about. Because I also want to talk about how God brought you through things that, you know, because there are signs, and here we go, because I have less than a minute, so I can't go there, but we will pick this back up after Thanksgiving. I want to thank everyone for listening, those who will listen to the recorded show. If you have any questions, comments, or survivor stories, the direct number is 214-454-2933. Our email address is wearesurvivorsfoundation@gmail.com. And we want to thank God for you listening. We pray that something on the show may have said, touched your heart, that let you know that we are here to help you, support, guide, and listen, and also lift you up in the name of Jesus. We will always worship his holy name. Until the next show, everyone be blessed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay. Judges? That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.